All right, I've set the recording up for you, Francis. So
That's terrific. Thank
over to you.
you. Okay, so that will automatically end after the recording, or do I need to stop it at the end?
It'll automatically end when you're done. Let me make you host so you can stop the meeting for all. Okay.
Okay, that'd be good. Hello, everyone. We're just doing some last minute technical stuff. So, apologies to the European contingent that is east of GMT, also to the Vietnamese. I understand that it's midnight in your neck of the woods. So, this is a very unusual that we're going this late. It was just because of the Tuya's presentation, Easter presentation. But normally we'll be starting 2 hours earlier than we did today. So anyway, welcome to this fourth webinar on Light of the Soul. We started our last session by taking a look at the life and works of Patanjali. We were still in the tail end of the introduction of the book. Patanjali compiled the Yoga Sutras that form the basis of Alice Bailey's Light of the Soul. He was considered to be an incarnation of the serpent god Ananta in traditional Hindu belief, and was named after the Anjali mudra, as shown here, which is today. This has become more and more used by people, hence the name Patanjali, or dropped into the Anjali. Patanjali collected the ancient oral rules that described how to control the lower sheaths, the lower mental, astral, and physical sheaths, rules that had existed since the dawn of the fifth root rays, and my guess is before that, and organize them into the sutras. We then began our study of the first of 51 sutras from Book One. Book One entitled The Problem of Union. And this first sutra states, Om, the following instruction concerneth the science of union. In her commentary, AAB points out that Aum, which she described as the word of glory, is the means by which the soul manifests on the lower mental, astral, and physical planes. Aum initiates an involutional force used to manifest spirit into matter. Thus, Aum literally is the word made flesh. Yeah, if you have any thoughts or questions anytime during the presentation, raise your hand. BL is still recovering from recent knee surgery, so I'll be on my own do that during this presentation. So, have patience. If you do raise your hand, it might take me a minute to get to you. If for some reason I don't call on you, it means that more than one of you have raised your hand at the same time, and so I didn't see the second hand go up. Just hang in there and I'll get to you. Or raise your hand again. So anyway, next we considered the seven progressive rules of Raja Yoga that lead an aspirant from personality to soul, to specifically to soul-centered consciousness that will be explored through the four books of the sutras. We can get an idea of this progression by looking at the first and last of these rules. The first states, conscious contact can be made with the soul, the second aspect, the Christ within. And the last states, the path can be found, and man himself become the path. We then took a look at a chart that lists the attributes of the first, second, and third aspects, which when read from right to left, describes the path of becoming and the means by which that path is tread. And that pretty much takes us up to where we left off last time. Okay, next we come to the second sutra of book one, which reads, "This union or yoga is achieved through the subjugation of the psychic nature and the restraint of the citta or mind. The follower, after union, has two things to do. First, to gain control of the versatile psychic nature, and second, to prevent the mind from assuming the many forms it so easily does. These are frequently called modifications of the thinking principle." This sutra represents a kind of mission statement for the entire book. Having defined the goal in the first sutra, Patanjali now defines the twofold task required to achieve it, which are subjugation of the psychic nature and restraint of the citta or mind stuff. Next, we begin AAB's commentary. The follower after union has two things to do. First, to gain control of the versatile psychic nature. So the versatile psychic nature is kama manas, or desire mind, the substance that clothes all desires and feelings, allowing them to be expressed. Versatile refers to the fact that kama, the vehicle of desire, constantly changes shape, fluctuating with every mood, feeling, and longing. Uncontrolled desire shuts out the light of the soul and negates spiritual consciousness. And two, to prevent the mind from assuming the many forms it so easily does, these are frequently called modifications of the thinking principle. So modifications of the thinking principle, called vrittis in Sanskrit, are thought forms which represent the near infinite possible modifications of citta, or mind stuff. AAB stresses that thought forms are actual forms composed of mental substance. So these two together act as a barrier. So they create a turbulence and a activity that basically keeps the ever-shining light of the soul from penetrating into the consciousness of the personality. So next up, if we could get a reader. Now I would appreciate if you would raise your hand if you're willing to read. Otherwise, I will call on you. And Barbara, would you be willing to read?
Yes.
Thank you.
These two produce control of the emotional body and therefore of desire, and control of the mental body and therefore of lower manas or mind. The student should remember that uncontrolled desire and an unregulated mind shut off the light of the soul and negate spiritual consciousness. Union is impossible as long as the barriers exist, and the master therefore directs the attention of the student at the beginning of his instruction to the practical work to be done in liberating this light so that it may shine forth in a dark place, for example, on the physical plane. It should be borne in mind that, occultly speaking, when the lower nature is controlled, It can manifest the higher. When the second aspect of the lower personal self, the emotional body, is subjugated or transmuted, then the Christ light, the second aspect, egoic, can be seen.
Thank you, Barbara. Okay, first, these two produce control of the emotional body and therefore of desire, and control of the mental body and therefore of lower manas or mind. The student should remember that uncontrolled desire and an unregulated mind shut off the light of the soul and negate spiritual consciousness. So, the astral and mental vehicles act as veils when the astral body is agitated by desire, kama. It produces vibratory turbulence. The light of the soul hits this turbulent astral substance and is refracted and diffused. Even though the matter of the lower mental plane is of a completely different substance, it also refracts and diffuses the light of the soul when the when that light contacts all the thought forms that we normally surround ourselves with. So a quiet mind and a placid, completely reflective astral plane, astral body, is necessary for the light to penetrate. So the function of lower mind is to build thought forms using those involutional elemental lives that live on the lower mental plane. Because the instinct of these little lives is to become denser and more concrete, right? Being involutional, they naturally resist the higher vibration, which seeks to etherealize them. Also, when the lower mind is spinning, its own centrifugal force repels the higher, subtler vibrations. So I want to remind you that anytime you have a thought or question about anything at all, just raise your hand and we'll have a dialogue instead of just a monologue. Okay, next up, union is impossible as long as the barriers exist. And the master therefore directs the attention of the student at the beginning of his instruction to the practical work to be done in liberating this light so that it may, quote, shine forth in a dark place, that is, on the physical plane. This is a key statement. No amount of prayer, devotion, or intellectual study can take the place of removing astral turbulence and mental busyness caused by glamour and illusion. It's just occult physics. The light of the soul is always present. Our work is to clear the path for its descent. And finally, it should be borne in mind that, occultly speaking, when the lower nature is controlled, it can manifest the higher. When the second aspect of the lower personal self, the emotional body, is subjugated or transmuted, then the Christ light, the second aspect, egoic, can be seen. So, because they both represent the second aspect, the astral body is the line of least resistance for the soul. Subjugation, or the calming of the waters, must precede transmutation. This is an alchemical process wherein personal desire first becomes aspiration, then love. Astrologically speaking, the red heat of Mars demonstrating through the solar plexus is transmuted or lifted into the rose light of Venus, demonstrating through the intelligence of the heart. Okay, thoughts or questions? Anyone? All right. Apologies for the small print. It's the only way I could get all these words in here. Could we get a reader, please? Angela Bartley, could you read for us?
Starting with later.
Yes.
Okay. Later in its life, the monad, the father, the one, will stand revealed. Equally, when the first aspect of the lower personal self, the mental body, is restrained, then the will aspect of the ego can be known. And through its activities, the purpose of the logos himself will be cognized. There are certain lines of least resistance in the spiritual life, and along them, certain forces of or energies are released.
Can you read that?
Emotional, intuitional, or Buddhic, monadic. To the heart of the aspirant. B, mental, spiritual, or atomic, logoic, to the head of the aspirant. The student is therefore given the word of restraint or control as a key to all his endeavors. The citta is the mind or mind stuff. The mental body, the faculty of thought and of thought form making, the sum total of the mental processes. It is the material governed by the ego or soul out of which thought forms are made.
Thank you, Angela. Okay, so first, later in its light, the monad, the father, the one, will stand revealed. Equally, when the first aspect of the lower personal self, the mental body, is restrained, then the will aspect of the ego can be known. And through its activities, the purpose of the logos himself will be cognized. So, having established the astral to soul love line, the text now defines the mental to spirit line of will. Notice the change in verbs, whereas the emotional body must be subjugated, then transmuted, the mental body is to be restrained, meaning that one must engage the will in order to quiet one's citta or mind stuff, so that the brain can register the source of one's higher will. Any thoughts or questions? Next. There are certain lines of least resistance in the spiritual life, and along them, certain forces or energies are released. I've taken this out. Emotional, intuitional, or Buddhic, monadic to the heart of the aspirant, mental, spiritual, or atmic, logoic to the head of the aspirant. These are the two lines of ascent and descent. The starting point, emotional on one line and lower mental on the other, begins with purification of the astral and the stilling of the lower mental vehicles. This clears the path for the energy of the Buddhic and Atmic planes to descend, which then, via the soul, opens the heart and head centers. Yes, Tia.
I think that it's helpful to think of this in a different way as well, in that because we are still in embodiment and have not taken the fourth initiation, or really the third initiation, we are using a physical etheric vehicle to make these contacts. And so, because we have a physical etheric vehicle that makes these contacts, we're actually working with the etheric body in many ways, energetically, to purify it so that the instrumentation that we have to access the higher realms is because we need our physical etheric body to access these higher realms, has to be purified and has to be in alignment in such a way that it can receive the downflows. I mean, that's the whole work of what we do until consciousness is actually polarized in the Buddhic sheath. And that causal body or this physical etheric instrumentation that we're using is no longer necessary to contact the higher planes. And that, in many ways, is the crux of the problem. And the focus of what our work is to do is to work with this vehicle that we have, and we have been so blessed with from the Deva that has provided it for us so that we can contact our divine nature, but realize that's really the instrumentation that we have to work with. And all of this is around refining that instrumentation.
Yeah, it's a kind of a horse and cart situation because one of the means by which the etheric body is stimulated is emotional and mental control. And they also have their etheric centers, and the three tend to develop simultaneously. But you're right, the grounding of the forces that come as a result of soul contact, the purificatory stages, then right action, right speech, right thought, etc., make their way into the etheric physical vehicle. And it's I find it curious that it's not included in this list, actually, now that you mention it, because it's certainly the final step in the grounding. I think AAB may argue that because the etheric vehicle is a third aspect, that it registers the effect of the work done in these first two stages. But I think that we also do purificatory work that leads to the heightening of the quality of the etheric body directly. So, yes, go ahead, Tia.
But I think it's so important to keep that in mind because we are an incarnation. And even for the stimulation of the Antahkarana, even the first span, I'm not even getting to the second span, is so dependent upon the etheric body and its stimulation as well. Utilizing that, we have to now, in this seventh ray age, bring spirit into matter. And so there has to be a conscious understanding of what vehicle we're using to do that and how we utilize that in the, and make utility of it in the most appropriate means that we can and efficient. I guess that's a seventh ray made or Virgo. So which is form. So it's all about how do we ground these sort of the how do we take theory and put it into application?
Yeah, good points. Good points all. And the this last column has its counterpart in the let me go to the next page. Yeah. So the heart of the aspirant and the head of the aspirant are chakras in the physical etheric as well as in the emotional, or I should say, astral and mental etheric bodies. Well, actually, the head center in the mental body is in the causal realms, but so they have their counterparts, and so there's a line of descent. It's very much like this idea of soul, mental body, and brain, and that the brain is essential for the grounding of the stream that begins in the soul, in the same way that the etheric heart and head centers are essential for the grounding of this line of descent. So thank you, Tia. Yes, Barbara.
Yes, well, I think that since we've gone through some centuries now of psychology, both Eastern and Western, I think there may be less dependence on purification and subjugation, and more on intelligence, and building intelligence at each plane, even at the etheric plane, an intelligence that can cooperate and have an upward movement across the Antahkarana, because of course it has to be a two-way flow. And I think we've seen in spectacular cases that just subjugating the ego, the lower manas, doesn't necessarily lead to higher initiation, because sometimes it's done unintelligently. And when it's done without the full cooperation that of the best that each of the vehicles, seas, and planes can offer, then it's just muting something.
Yeah, you make a really good point. It basically, what you described is the goal of the fifth root race. You know, initiation took place in Lemurian times, even though we can't even imagine what that initiation would have involved, because, you know, DK is adamant about the idea that there was no intelligence as we understand it at that time. And yet, up to and through the third initiation did take place. It was very, very dependent on Hatha Yoga and the coming into direct awareness of the etheric body and its nature, and had not, you know, there was no equivalent to our third initiation, which is the transforming of the mental apparatus so that it is soul infused, right? So yes, and that there was an emotional orientation in the Atlantean race, and the subjugation or the quieting of the emotional body was the focus, and up to the fourth initiation was able to be taken. But it's important to realize that the causal body was not at that fourth initiation shattered in those days, that it was a whole different series of lesser initiations that finally led to the, you know, prodigious accomplishment of of control of the emotional body, not unlike in some ways our second initiation now. But this, the need for intelligent participation and occult awareness of the processes, right? For instance, in the rules that appear in initiation, human and solar rules for applicants and disciples and initiates, those rules. It's quite clear, like in Rule 10, it's quite clear that one must consciously evolve oneself in an awareness of the processes that the army of the voice participates in. In other words, all aspects of the third aspect and how form is built. And this is not mastered until the third initiation. Of course, it's totally requires an extremely developed mind in order to do this. So yeah, it's not purification, just that's part of the aspirational level. Probationary discipleship is also about clearing one's vehicle so that you can begin, the process. But yeah, thank you, Barbara. That's well stated. Anyone else? I think there was somebody else. Let me see. Tia, did your hand up again, or you just didn't do it? Put it down.
Yes, I have my hand up again.
Okay.
I would like to say, or I would add that sometimes these distinctions are not so clear. I do know that purification is leading up to the first initiation. However, another way to think of purification is refinement. And when we think about the various energies that are involved in these initiations, when you think about Vulcan, it's destruction, but really it's refinement of the vehicles, because we do need to, as we move into these different, going back to the physical etheric body that we have, we're going to be working on repolarization of our centers.
Right.
And so there has to be a refinement that has to take place. And it's not just intelligence, but it's consciousness, right? The evolution of consciousness that we're talking about. We have to make intelligent use of our vehicle and consciously work towards the refinement that is necessary for the evolution to take place. So it's a much more a conscious activity that we're engaged in, but we're also working with energies in a much more subtler manner. So it's the
Right.
refinement and then of Vulcan, and then you're moving on to Neptune and then ultimately Uranus. And each one of those things is a different aspect of the three, right? The three rays of aspect in expression. So
Right.
that's
Yeah.
another.
Intelligence by itself will get you nowhere because, the Black Lodge, for instance, is full of unusually intelligent people, but they have circumscribed their goals and orientation to achieve the potencies that are necessary to perform black magic, and it has nothing to do with the as you say, the refinement of the vehicles. In fact, their vehicles are quite coarse. And that refinement is the literal occult science of that is the as the centers gain velocity, they spin off the coarser matter and they attract finer matter up through the midpoint of the center, and that gradually replaces the entire composition of the etheric body is in that way lifted up until one is there's that famous quote by DK about having 25% atomic matter at the first initiation, 50% at the second, and 75% at the third. And this is one way of measuring this refining process that is necessary. So yeah, and you all aspects of this are necessary because you have to remember that the same refining quality of the centers is happening within the emotional body and within the mental body, right? That the lower quality matter is being sloughed off, so to speak, or rotated in such a way that that falls off the periphery, and the higher quality matter is brought in through the center of the chakras on all three planes. So in that, it's not just the physical, and it's not just the intellect. These are all deeply integrated processes. Okay, where are we here? Okay, so next up, the student is therefore given the word. Let me make sure I get everybody. Normally this would be BL's purview. Okay, I did. A student is therefore given the word, this is so important, of restraint or control as a key to all his endeavors. So this sentence goes way beyond just stating that the aspirant must learn to restrain his or her mental body. The quote unquote word, especially when capitalized, suggests use of a mantra that carries a particular vibratory frequency that is capable of restraining one's chitta. Restraint does not mean repression, which is dangerous, and why these types of words are not made public, but rather a type of psychic regulation that leads to arresting the motion of the mind, right? The Sanskrit word for restraint is nirodha. It's one of the most important in Raja Yoga, as in yoga's chittas vritti nirodha, meaning yoga is the restraint of the modifications of the mind's stuff. So these words of restraint are part of Raja Yoga. And then finally, the chitta is the mind or mind stuff, the mental body, the faculty of thought and of thought making, the sum total of the mental processes. It is the material governed by the ego or soul out of which thought forms are made. So this shifts our understanding of the mind from being the thing we are, quote unquote, to a substance that we use, the mind stuff used by the indweller to construct thought forms. The sum total of mental processes is reflected in one's mental aura, which the disciple must purify through stilling the mind and controlling one's thoughts. Next up, can we get a reader, please? And Veronica, can you read for us? Oh, no, you're interpreting. That's all right. How about Ariane? Can you read?
Yes, I can. Thank you. The psychic nature is kama manas, desire mind, the emotional or astral body, tinged faintly with mind, and is the material clothing of all our desires and feelings. Thereby, they are expressed. These two types of substance have their own line of evolution to follow, and they do so. Under the logoic plan, the spirits or divine sparks are imprisoned by them, being first attracted to them through the mutual interplay of spirit and matter. By the control of these substances, and the restraint of their instinctual activities, these spirits gain experience and eventually liberation. Thus, union with the soul is brought about. It is a union known and experienced in the physical body upon the plane of densest manifestation through the conscious, intelligent control of the lower nature.
Thank you, Ariane. So first, the psychic nature is kama manas, desire mind, the emotional or astral body tinged faintly with mind and is the material clothing of all our desires and feelings. Thereby, they are expressed, thereby meaning through the psychic nature. So as here used, the term psychic nature refers strictly to the lower self. Psychic is also used to, has its root as meaning soul. And in some of Dike's writings, he uses it to refer to the soul. But in this context, it's the kama manas. Kama means desire, passion, and animal drive, whereas manas, as you know, means lower mind or intelligence. Important here is the phrase tinged faintly, which identifies kama manas as a kind of rationalized desire where the intellect becomes the servant of one's desires. The quote-unquote material clothing are the thought forms needed to empower our desires. It's a killer combination, and it controls us for an untold number of lifetimes. Next, these two types of substances have their own line of evolution to follow, and they do so. Under the Logoic plan, the spirits or divine sparks are imprisoned by them, being first attracted to them through the mutual interplay of spirit and matter. So the two types of substance are citta and kama manas, which are composed of myriads of teeny sentient lives called elementals, which are on the evolutionary arc. We see the kingdoms involved with that carry these here in this chart. Just as each of us are animated by a divine spark, so are these tiny elemental lives who, by means of the involutionary arc, are responding to the Logoic plan. But this works counter to where we're going, which is why we have to control them, or we cannot overcome their involutional direction. Next. By the control of these substances and the restraint of their instinctual activities, these spirits gain experience and eventual liberation. Note the word instinctual, which references the instinct of the elemental lives that compose our citta and kama manas. Through restraint, we not only clear the way for our own evolution, but also raise the vibration of these little lives. In esoteric science, our mental and emotional bodies are made up of the second and third elemental kingdoms, which AAB here calls spirits. As you may know, these tiny lives are on the downward arc. Their immediate evolutionary goal is actually to become physical minerals. So when we meditate and restrain them, we are not forcing them to evolve upwards, but rather by stilling our thoughts and emotions, we imprint these tiny lives with a degree of order and rhythm, which doesn't change their downward direction, but does raise the quality of their expression. Finally, thus union with the soul is brought about. It is a union known and experienced in the physical body upon the plane of densest manifestation through the conscious, intelligent control of the lower nature. This is a mission statement, really, for the whole book. Union is not a state you enter by leaving the body, dying, or going into a trance. And spirituality is not an escape from the quote unquote plane of densest manifestation. Instead, the goal is to bring the high frequency of the soul down into the brain, thus fulfilling the purpose of being an incarnated soul. Okay, thoughts or questions? I see a chat here. Okay, I'm going to read Tia's comment. Sometimes when reading the Tibetan's work, one might benefit from seeing what is missing from the objectified discussion. Subjectively, it is what is seemingly overlooked that is the subject of import that pervades the entire discussion. Here, emotional and mental purification is discussed, though underpinning much of this understanding is the refinement of the physical etheric body. This is a technique often used in working with symbols. So I think we had a discussion on that. Thank you, Tia. Okay, next up, can we get a reader, please? Scott, are you with us?
Yes.
Could you read, please?
Sure. Three, when this has been accomplished, the yogi knows himself as he is in reality. This might be described in the following way. The man who knows the conditions and has fulfilled them, as indicated in the preceding sutra, 1. Sees the self. 2. Realizes the true nature of the soul. 3. Identifies himself with the inner reality and no longer with the concealing forms. 4. Dwells in the center and no longer upon the periphery. 5. Achieves spiritual consciousness. 6. Awakes to recognition of the God within. In these three verses, the method and the goal are described in clear and certain terms, and the way prepared for the more detailed instruction to follow. The aspirant faces his problem. The clue to its solution is given to him, and the reward, union with the soul, is held before his seeking eye.
Thank you, Scott. First, this is our third sutra. When this has been accomplished, the yogi knows himself as he is in reality. Yeah, apologies for the the consistent male gender, you know, in DK's time, the he, him gender was also considered a universal gender. It's not so much recognized as that, so it can be grating. I always say he or she. So anyway. When this has been accomplished, the yogi knows himself as he is in reality. So this marks the end of mistaken identity. To know oneself as he or she is in reality suggests that previously the indweller knew him or herself as a personality, almost totally conditioned by astral glamour and mental illusion. Reality, as here used, does not refer to the nature of the outer world, like, you know, get real, but to how one is perceiving that world. Okay, so now we get into the commentary. This might be described in the following way. The man who knows the conditions and has fulfilled them as indicated in the previous sutra, one sees the self. So, when the conditions are met, gained on astral levels through non-attachment, also called divine indifference, which leads to a stilling of the astral vehicle, and on mental levels through use of the word of restraint, the inner eye opens and sees what in Sanskrit is called the drashta, a term for the soul in its capacity as the observer. In Western psychology, we say, I think, therefore I am. In Raja Yoga, we say, I watch the thinking, therefore I am. The one who watches the mind thinking is the drashta, the true self. The verb sees is key here. The yogi has moved beyond believing in the self to having direct perception and thus direct evidence of the existence of the higher self. For the soul becomes as visible and tangible to the inner eye as a physical object is to the physical eye. Seeing is the first of a progressively deeper series of realizations. Any thoughts or questions? Okay. Two, realizes the true nature of the soul. Here we move from vision to knowing the nature or quality of the soul. This true nature is divided into three aspects. Could we get a reader here? Let's see. T, are you with us?
Yes.
Thank you.
That being, unlike the body, which is always changing and dying, the soul simply is. It is immortal and permanent. Chit, consciousness. Unlike the mind, which learns sequentially, the soul has direct intuitive knowledge. Ananda, bliss. Unlike the emotions which fluctuate between happy and sad, the soul is in a state of constant, causeless joy.
So this is often combined into Satchitananda, which is describes the state of soul consciousness. Next, three, identifies himself with the inner reality and no longer with the concealing forms. Seeing, then perceiving, and now identification, right? The yogi withdraws his or her sense of self from the personality to the soul, thereby moving his or her center of gravity from form to spirit and from the periphery to the center of the circle. You see this progression of seeing, realizing, and identification. Next, four, dwells in the center and no longer upon the periphery. This references a circle with the point in the center, often used by DK as a symbol for the solar logos, but here used to represent soul and personality. In this use of the symbol, the periphery represents the cycle of birth and rebirth, the senses and the outer world, all characteristic of the realm of personality. In contrast, the point in the center represents the soul who sends a series of personalities out to the periphery in order to gain experience, but whose intrinsic nature is stillness. Dwelling in the center comes through identification with the soul. Next, five, achieves spiritual consciousness. In the Bailey teaching, spiritual consciousness refers to the ever unfolding awareness of the unity of all life. First, through group or soul consciousness, and later through synthetic or monadic consciousness. In this list, it represents the I am that consciousness, symbolized by Aquarius, which is the consciousness of the second aspect, group consciousness. Next, awakens to recognition of the God within. Here, the word awakes implies that normal human life is a dream state. We are dreaming that we are mortal, separate beings. The yogi doesn't become God. He simply wakes up from the dream of being a separated personality to recognition, which implies remembrance of the God within. And finally, in these three verses, the method and the goal are described in clear and certain terms, and the way prepared for the more detailed instructions to follow. The aspirant faces his problem, the clue to its solution is given to him, and the reward, union with the soul, is held before his seeking eye. So here are the first three verses of book one, which are cited in this passage. The aspirant faces his problem references the first verse. The clue to its solution is given to him comes through the second verse. And the reward, union with the soul, is held before his seeking eye, is described in the commentary on the third verse. So we must face our problem, the chaotic mind, apply the clue, restraint, in order to earn the reward, union. The whole rest of the book is a manual on how to accomplish these three sutras. Okay. Any thoughts or questions? All righty then. Next up, verse four, or sutra four. Let's see here. Tia, can you read for us?
Past is briefly covered in the next verse, four. Up till now, the inner man has identified himself with his forms and with their active modifications. These forms are the modifications mentioned in the various translations, conveying the subtle truth concerning the infinite divisibility of the atom. These are the veiling sheaths and rapidly changing transformations, which prevent the true nature of the soul becoming manifest. These are the externalities which hinder the light of the inner God from shining forth, and which are occultly spoken of as casting a shadow before the face of the sun. The inherent nature of the lives which constitute these active versatile forms has hitherto proved too strong for the soul, the Christ within, as the Christian puts it, and the soul powers have been prevented full expression. The instinctual powers of the animal soul, or the capacities of the aggregate of lives, which from the sheaths or bodies imprison the real man and limit his powers. These lives are intelligent units on the involutionary arc of evolution, working towards self-expression.
Thank you, Tia. So, first, the past is briefly covered in the next verse. Four, up till now, the inner man has identified himself with his forms and with their active modifications. So the phrase up till now actually covers millions of years of evolution. During all our previous lives, we have identified with our physical bodies, emotions, and lower mind activity. Active modifications, called citta vrittis in Sanskrit, refers to the waves on the surface of the mind stuff, like waves in an ocean. Next, these forms are the modifications mentioned in the various translations, conveying the subtle truth concerning the infinite divisibility of the atom. These are the veiling sheaths and rapidly changing transformations which prevent the true nature of the soul becoming manifest. So AAB's reference to the infinite divisibility of the atom is key to understanding citta, or mind stuff. Just as physical matter can be split infinitely from molecules to atoms to quarks, citta, or mind stuff, can be split into endless modifications. This divisibility is a trap. The mind gets lost in the millions of details, thereby losing the sense of the one. For example, when we think of a dog, the mind stuff literally rearranges its atoms to take the form of a dog. We're not just thinking, we are constantly modifying the shapes we force our mental clay, chitta, to adopt. These shapes then surround us, creating our personal environment, but critically, at the same time, blocking the light of the soul. Next, these are the externalities which hinder the light of the inner God from shining forth, and which are occultly spoken of as casting a shadow before the face of the sun. All thoughts, all emotions and forms are externalities and are thus peripheral to the central point. Even our most cherished ideas and spiritual feelings are external to our true self. This is a hard thing to come into an awareness of because we get so attached to our most cherished ideas. So the mind does not need to create light, and this is so important. It just needs to learn how to stop blocking it. Yes, Barbara.
Yes, so in some of the teachings, particularly on the egoic lotus, there's a sense that at the fifth petal, that one must serve, one must make a creative contribution. That it isn't only enhancement of consciousness and certain alignments, but it is a contribution that that's described as an individuated contribution that only a particular soul and personality could produce. And that our evolution goes forward through these contributions and service, and not only the evolution of consciousness.
Yeah, that's well said. And it brings up the point that, there are aspects to these teachings that include other activities. As you say, the fifth petal, which is the middle petal of the love tier of petals, is a critical petal, right? Because it's that response to the soul is evolves enormously during one's sojourn with the activity of that petal, right? It's also a petal where you get people taking a left and going into the dark path, usually to come back, in a lifetime or two. But it's a very expansive petal in terms of the activity of one's consciousness. And it's during that time that those who are in soul contact gain this understanding of the necessity to serve, that service, DK tells us, study, service, and meditation are the three prongs that are necessary, right? And they all enhance each other. All three of those are also part of the process that's here being described. It's not like you do this for a while, and then you go out and serve or study or meditate. They are all part and parcel with the nature of the quality and the progressive steps that are brought about through these sutras. Thank you, Barbara. In fact, there are so many lines of development in DK's books that are actually take place co-evil, meaning at the same time, right? They all, you know, if you want to focus on the evolution of the Kundalini, you can, you know, and DK does this in The Trees of Cosmic Fire. He describes evolution strictly in terms of, you know, the light of matter spreading up through the chakras, forming triangles, blazing forth, contacting the light of mind, which is, you know, then fuses with the light of mind and contacts the light of soul. So that's one language for evolution. Another language is we're being subject to here through these sutras, right? So eventually you recognize how they cross-pollinate and interrelate. Okay, next. The inherent nature of the lives which constitute these active versatile forms has hitherto proved too strong for the soul, the Christ within, as the Christians put it, and the soul powers have been prevented full expression. So we're here reminded that our sheaths are made up of myriads of elementals on the involutional path whose inherent nature opposes our intention to unite with the soul. As here used, the term versatile means busy, unstable, and constantly changing direction. And finally, the instinctual powers of the animal soul, or the capacities of the aggregate of lives which form the sheaths or bodies, imprison the real man and limit his powers. These lives are intelligent units on the involutionary arc of evolution, working toward self-expression. So we've covered some of this, but never hurts to repeat. Whenever you see the word soul, universal soul, divine soul, group soul, human soul, or in this case, animal soul, you can just substitute the word consciousness. In this case, the animal soul is the consciousness of the body itself, right? It is not a single entity, but the combined livingness of all the little lives manifesting as hunger, thirst, sexual drive, and survival instincts of the billions of cells that make up our physical, astral, and mental bodies. These tiny lives, quote unquote, imprison the real man because they are on the involutionary arc and thus vibrationally fight against the evolution of the indweller. Okay, next up. Let's see, who we have. Michelle, can you read?
Their objective is, however, different from that of the inner man, and they hinder his progress and self-realization. He becomes enmeshed in their activities and must free himself before he comes into his heritage of power and peace and bliss. He cannot attain unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of the Christ. 413, I don't know what EP pages represents. Until there is no modifications to be felt, until the forms are transformed, their activities quieted, and their restlessness stilled. The student is urged to bear in mind the nature of this aspect of evolution, which is proceeding concurrently with his own. In his right apprehension of this problem comes realization of the practical work to be done, and the embryo yogi can begin his work. The lower forms are constantly and ceaselessly active, endlessly assuming the forms of impulsive desires or dynamic mental thought forms. And it is only as this form taking is controlled and the tumult of the lower nature stilled that it becomes possible for the inner ruling entity to liberate himself from thraldom and impose his vibration upon the lower modifications.
Thank you, Michelle. So first, their objective is, however, different from that of the inner man, and they hinder his progress in self-realization. He becomes enmeshed in their activities and must free himself before he comes into his heritage of power and peace and bliss. In this way, we are like a spider in its web, with the threads of the web representing the desire nature and the knots, the thought forms from which the desires emerge. The spider controls his web, but the web also controls the spider, for it cannot conceive of life beyond the web. Next, he cannot attain unquote, unquote, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, Ephesians 4:13, until there are no modifications to be felt, until the forms are transformed, their activities quieted, and their restlessness stilled. So the measure of the fullness of the Christ refers to the degree of becoming that we've achieved, made up of the specific steps that must be taken to become soul infused, which is the fullness of the Christ principle. In Raja Yoga terms, there are no modifications to be felt, means that the mind stuff or citta has been stilled. Ephesians 4:13 states, till we all come in the unity of the faith, and of the awaken of the and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. It's actually a phrase, not a sentence. So unity of faith is alignment of the Buddhic and astral vehicles. Knowledge of the Son of God comes through an illumined mind. Any thoughts or questions? Tia says, till we all come in the unity of faith. Ah, she's quoting it. Thank you. Before I got to it, so. Thank you. Okay, next, the student is urged to bear in mind the nature of this aspect of evolution, which is proceeding concurrently with his own. Talking about the elemental lives. In his right apprehension of this problem comes realization of the practical work to be done, and the embryo yogi can begin his work. So we are compound entities, right, which include the evolution of spirit, our true selves, you know, the human soul entrapped in the personality, and the evolution of matter, our bodies. Matter, including astral feelings and mental thought forms, seeks concretion, because for these little lives, growth is seen as the seeking of sensation. Left to their own volition, thought forms and feelings become more and more concretized. This is why meditation is so difficult. When we try to impose stillness, the elemental lives get starved and begin creating random memories, speculations, or manufacturing worry just to feel something. It is this understanding of the nature of these evolutional lives that create, quote, right apprehension of this problem. However, awareness of the evolutional nature of the little lives that make up our she's is just the beginning of the path for the quote-unquote embryo yogi. And finally, the lower forms are constantly and ceaselessly active, endlessly assuming the forms of impulsive desires or dynamic mental thought forms. And it is only as this form-taking is controlled and the tumult of the lower nature stilled that it becomes possible for the inner ruling entity to liberate himself from thraldom and impose his vibration upon the lower modifications. So using the words constantly, ceaselessly, and endlessly, AAB emphasizes the relentlessness of these little elemental lives that make up our lower nature. This is because the natural state of these little lives is sustained by impulsive desire and thought form generation, which together creates tumult. The concept of form taking, which is the literal translation of the Sanskrit word vritti, is interesting. Chitta, or mind stuff, has no shape of its own. It takes the shape of whatever is presented to it. If you think of a person, the mind takes the form of that person. If you think of an enemy, the mind not only takes that form, but also constructs the forms of fear or anger in the astral body. As long as the mind is busy taking these lower forms, it cannot take the form of the soul, which is why we have to impose the vibration of the quote unquote inner ruling entity upon these lower modifications. Any thoughts or questions? Okay. Next up. Let's see here. Annette Ebbett, are you able to read? No, I guess not. All right. How about Ben? Can you read for us?
This is achieved through concentration. The concentrated effort of the soul to hold steady the position of observer or perceiver and of seer. When he can do this, the lower spectacle of the rapidly changing forms of thought and desire fades away. And the realm of the soul, the true field of soul knowledge, can be seen and contacted. The mind states are five and are subject to pleasure or pain. They are painful or not painful.
Thank you.
More? No.
No, I think that was... Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. They are painful or not painful. In the original, the word pleasure does not occur. The thought conveyed is more technical and is usually translated as not painful. Nevertheless, the underlying thought is the hindrance to realization caused by the pairs of opposites. The student must remember that in this sutra, it is the citta, or mind stuff, which is under consideration, with the modifications it undergoes, as long as its versatility and activity are controlling factors. He must not lose sight of the fact that we are dealing with the lower psychic nature, which is the term occultly applied to the lower mind processes, as well as to the astral or emotional reactions.
Thank you, Ben. So first, this is achieved through concentration. We're talking about controlling of the lesser lives, the concentrated effort of the soul to hold steadily the position of observer or perceiver and of seer. So usually we think of concentration as the mind focusing on some idea or object. But because this form of concentration arises from the indwelling jiva rather than the mind, it involves identifying with the point of stillness in the center of the circle of the personality activity, which AAB here calls holding steadily the position of observer or receiver and of seer. Next, when he can do this, the lower spectacle of the rapidly changing forms of thought and desire fades away, and the realm of the soul, the true field of soul knowledge, can be seen and contacted. So cittavrittas, the modifications of the mind, our worries, plans, and daydreams, etc., are a spectacle put on by the elemental lives. They are trying, and for eons succeeding, in capturing our attention. As long as we are watching the show, we cannot see the theater in which this attention-grabbing spectacle is taking place. But in order to stop the show, we must learn to withdraw from thought form generation by shifting our attention from mind to soul, from the motion of the circle to the stillness of the point in the center. Then, when the noise is quieted, the true field of soul knowledge can be seen and eventually known. Okay, thoughts, questions? Next, the fifth sutra of book one. The mind states are five and are subject to pleasure or pain. They are painful or not painful. So the modifications of the mind are not an infinite chaos. In fact, every movement of the mind fits into, we're told, one of five categories, which, by the way, will be listed in the next sutra. In addition, all thoughts are either painful or not painful. Painful thoughts, called klishta in Sanskrit, increase the darkness because they reinforce the separated self, the idea of a separated self. Positive or quote unquote not painful thoughts, called aklishta, move us towards liberation, though eventually both types of thoughts have to be transcended. Next, in the original, the word pleasure does not occur. The thought conveyed is more technical and is usually translated as not painful. Nevertheless, the underlying thought is the hindrance to realization caused by the pairs of opposites. Pleasure is just a positive form of kama manas, which is why the more neutral, not painful, is used. Actually more indicative of the real state. But the true enemy to soul awareness is the ever active pairs of opposites, which fuels kama manas. As long as we react in any way to the pairs of opposites, we keep the pendulum swinging, right? Which prevents the necessary stillness, the quieting of the mind needed for soul contact. Next, the student must remember that in this sutra, it is the citta or mind stuff which is under consideration, with the modifications it undergoes as long as its versatility and activity are controlling factors. So again, we're reminded that we are not our minds. We use our minds. But cittavrittas, the modifications of the mind, and versatility, here meaning the tendency to constantly shift focus, lead us to identify with the mind. And finally, he must not lose sight of the fact that we are dealing with the lower psychic nature, which is the term occultly applied to the lower mind processes, as well as to the astral or emotional reactions, also called kama manas. Okay. Any thoughts or questions about anything so far? Okay. Next up, could we get a reader, please? Let me look here. Is Frances McKinney able to read?
Yes.
Thank you. My namesake.
So I read from all activity.
I'm sorry? Yeah, all activity, that's correct.
All activity in the lower nature is the result of karma manas, or of mind tinged with feeling, of the desire will of the lower man. The goal of the Raja Yoga system is that these impulses should be replaced by the considered intelligent action of the soul or spiritual man, whose nature is love, whose acts are wise or courtly understood, and whose motive is group development. Therefore, that reaction called pain must be transcended, and likewise, that termed pleasure, for both of these are dependent upon identification with form. Non-attachment must supersede them. It is interesting to note that the modifications of the internal organ, the mind, are five in number. Manas, or mind, the actuating principle of the citta, or mind stuff, is the fifth principle, and like all else in nature, manifests as a duality. This duality is one, lower concrete mind, demonstrating as the activity of the mental body. Two, abstract mind, demonstrating as the lowest aspect of the ego.
Thank you, Francis. Okay, we're going to pick up here. We'll reread this next time, and this will be the basis for beginning of our next session. Thank you all for participating. There is a Treatise on Cosmic Fire webinar this coming Friday. I invite you all to participate in that. And you want to pay close attention to, if you get the Constant Contact mailings this month, because since there will be a conference, there will be some classes that are delayed or rescheduled. But I'm going to try to do as many of the classes on the right dates as possible, though I know there are some that won't be possible, like, for instance, the second Treatise on Cosmic Fire. So just, you know, stay aware. You can always go to moriafederation.com and look at the calendar there and stay up to date that way. So, yeah, thank you very much. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.